Well, good morning, everybody. If you're a visitor, you're really welcome. My name is Martin Slack. I'm the pastor of Westlake. And as Christoph said, this is our last at the Book of Proverbs. And once we are done, you might just be glad about the fact that it is our last look at Proverbs, because we are going to see, as Christoph said, we're going to see what Proverbs, which, as we've seen, is a book that was written to help you and me learn to navigate life with skill. Okay, we're going to look and see what it has to say about husbands and wives and what you should look for when you're looking for a partner, and how you should treat your partner when you find one, and how you should raise your kids. Okay, so absolutely nothing controversial this morning. This is going to be like taking a Sunday morning stroll through a minefield. And if you want to know why Sue and I are sat further back today rather than the front row, so that she can't throw anything at me. Okay, and I'll tell you all of that because if marriage and family can be a huge blessing in our lives, which they can, okay, they can also be a source of huge heartache, can't they? And so it makes sense that if Proverbs wants to teach us how to live wisely, it just makes sense that it is going to open the front door on our homes and on our most intimate relationships and say, hey, come on, let's take a look. And the Bible repeatedly highlights marriage and family as being crucial to our personal well-being, but also to the well-being of community and society. And arguably, if you listen into what is going on out there in the world, arguably some of our governments and secular academics are having to play catch up with that. Just recently, Brad Wilcox, professor of sociology at the University of Virginia, he's recently published a book called Get Married, the subtitle of which reads, Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and Save Civilization. Okay, now if you think that is hyperbole, he would say to you, hey, listen in, the data, and he's a secular academic, he would say the data is absolutely clear, however uncomfortable it might make academics like him feel. The key to personal happiness is not you making lots of money. It is not you living for yourself. The key to personal happiness is having a good marriage, and that children brought up in such a marriage do better across just about every measure that can be measured. And if you've been tracking in the news, this is not just about saving American civilization. I mean, you may have seen in the press last week the latest figures for the marriage and birth rates in South Korea, which are falling through the floor. And that is a picture that is, you know, mirrored across most of Western Europe. So much so that at this rate in South Korea, the population will have halved by 2100. With all the security and economic implications of that, not just for them, but potentially in the whole of that area of the world. Or take the Votations here in Switzerland just last Sunday. The problem with the pension situation is not just that people are living longer, it is that less children are being born to help support those increasing numbers of elderly people. Or think of gang-related crimes in many of our inner cities and the well-documented role that the absence of fathers plays in that. Okay, so marriage and having kids and how we raise them matters. It matters at a national level, it matters at an international level. But it also matters at the level of our own hearts and homes, doesn't it? I mean, for example, if you are single, how hard should you try and get married? And if you try, what sort of partner should you look for? Or if you are married, what should, sort of partner should you be? How should you treat your husband or your wife, especially when conflict is present? Or if you're a parent and life is exhausting, is life exhausting because you are being diligent to discipline your children and it is hard? Or is life hard because you're not being diligent enough? And it's just some of those complexities that Proverbs wants to help us navigate. Okay, so firstly, first point, home, happy or hell? Okay, now Proverbs was originally written primarily to help the young men in King Solomon's court, in his household, who are going to become the future leaders. It's written to help them learn how to order their lives right. And what it makes clear is that after your relationship with God, when it comes to how things are going to go with your life, nothing matters like your wife. Proverbs 18:22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. And that is saying something. Okay, but now compare that to Proverbs 8 verse 35. Whoever finds me wisdom finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. The implication is clear, isn't it? After learning to live life with wisdom, the best thing that can happen to a man is to find a wife. And when you do, she is God's gift of grace to you. You could never earn her. You could never deserve her. But out of his unmerited love for you, God gives her to you. And guys, she is, her value to you is beyond price. Proverbs 31 verse 10. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. Okay, so imagine a bank vault down in Geneva. And you go into this bank vault and there are trays upon trays upon trays of diamonds. And you can just run your hands through them, or pile upon pile of sapphires and rubies. Proverbs is saying you could give them all away and in their place find a wife and you will be all the richer. That is her value to you. But not any old wife. Proverbs 19:14. House and wife are inherited from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. Now I want you to see the but there, because this is, he's drawing a contrast. He's setting up a contrast. Okay? You can inherit from your parents, and they can set you up financially for life. But that is nothing in comparison to how God sets you up for life with a wife, a prudent wife. Now note the absence, young men, okay, note the absence of any reference to physical looks. Okay, this is about a woman who is wise and discerning, who has insight and integrity. You see, if you are young and single, how a, and this is true for men and women, okay, if you are young and single, how a future partner looks may be right up there on your list of criteria. She's got to be a stunner. I mean, she, you know, her figure has to be just so. Or he's got to have dark eyes and, you know, just curly hair. Listen to Proverbs 31 verse 30. Charm is deceitful. There's the word charm. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Now, why are charm and beauty deceitful and vain? Because physical characteristics change, don't they? You see, one of the things that Sue first found attractive about me was my hair. Okay, and look how that turned out. And external beauty has this tendency to go saggy and fall out. But when your wife loves God more than anything else, when she fears him, there is an inner beauty that grows more beautiful by the day. Okay, but secondly, external beauty can be deceitful because it makes you think that the beauty goes all the way down. Proverbs 11:22, and we've looked at this one before. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without discretion. Okay, look at that pig coming in the door. What comes in first? The ring comes in. Look how shiny that ring is. Look how that ring glints in the sunlight. Yes, but there is a pig attached to it. And this woman that you are interested in, or this guy who you are texting, okay, they may be beautiful, they may be handsome, they may be fun to be around with, but what is their character like? Do they love God more than themselves? Do they love God more than you? Do they want to gaze upon him more than they want to gaze at themselves in the mirror? You see, the reason you should want such a wife, a prudent wife, a wife who fears and loves God more than anyone else, Proverbs says, is that such a woman of beautiful character will be the stabilizing force in a home. Proverbs 14 verse 1. The wisest of women builds her house, or more literally, womanly wisdom, or the wisdom of a woman, the wisdom of a wife, is what builds a home, so that all who are in it flourish. And Proverbs 31 tells us that she does that in multiple different ways. Her life is centered upon home, but through her work, through her business, through her art, through her generosity, through her hospitality, through her having and raising children, through her managing her staff, her influence spreads far beyond home. And as a result, she flourishes, and her husband flourishes, and her children flourish. Proverbs 31 verse 11. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. Okay, so it's no wonder, is it, that Proverbs uses the same word to describe how her husband speaks of her as what we offer to God. Proverbs 31 verses 28 and 29. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Guys, husbands, I wonder if you do that. He praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. But Proverbs is not naive, is it? Okay, it knows that not every marriage is a fairy tale. Proverbs 12 verse 4. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who brings shame is like rottenness in his bones. Okay, so a wife can be a crown, or, and we'll get to husbands in a minute, or she can be like a cancer. And as we saw last week, the area that Proverbs homes in on is that of speech. Proverbs 19:13. A wife's quarreling is a continual dripping of rain. Okay, so imagine that you are woken in the night by the sound of dripping. And you get up and there is rain coming in at the ceiling. There is rain coming in at the roof. So you run off to the kitchen and you grab yourself a saucepan and you put the saucepan down hoping to catch the drips. But as soon as you've done that, it starts springing out over here as well. There's now drips coming in over here. So you run back to the kitchen, you get another saucepan and you go and put it there. But as soon as you put it there, another one is leaking over here. So you run and get a bucket and you go and put that one there. And then, oh no, here's another one. So you go and run and get another bucket. And so you've run out of buckets and saucepans. So you're running around trying to just circulate these buckets and saucepans, trying to catch the rain. And Proverbs says a marriage can be just like that. Now, we're not told why this wife is quarreling. We'll get to some possible reasons in a minute. But for now, whatever this husband does, he can't get it right. Nothing is ever good enough. Nothing is ever sufficient. And like dripping water can wear down a rock, so quarreling can wear down a heart. Proverbs 21, verse 9 and verse 19. It is better to live in a corner of the housetop than in a house shared with a quarrelsome wife. It is better to live in a desert land than with a quarrelsome and fretful woman. There you go. So, a wife who is continually expressing her unhappiness can make her husband's life feel more cramped than a tent on a rooftop, and more arid and dry than a desert. Okay, but why is she quarreling? Okay, what is going on? Well, Jesus says, as we saw last week, that it is out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks. So this is about what is going on in her heart. And James writes, James, brother of Jesus, writes, "What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions, your desires, what you want, are at war within you?" Okay, so quarreling comes in a marriage when one spouse wants something and the other spouse is not giving it. And those desires may be wrong. They may be wrong. They may be wanting something that is not right or that the husband can't possibly give. And you probably know people who put unreasonable demands on their partner, man or woman. But the demands may not be wrong. What she's wanting may not be wrong, and he may be able to give it. Proverbs 27, verse 8, "Like a bird who strays from its nest is a man who strays from his home." And a bird who abandons its nest is abandoning its role to protect and provide for the chicks inside. And a husband for whom home is not enough, and he wants to be out. He wants to be doing something exciting. Man, I want to be doing the sort of stuff that I used to be able to do before I was married, before these kids came along. I just feel so constrained. I need to get out. He wants something more than home. Or for whom home is too much, and work and sport is way less demanding. Proverbs says such a man has deserted his duty. And maybe that is why his wife is unhappy. She's calling him to his duty. But as well as being protected and provided for, maybe she just wants to be cherished. Maybe she does just want to hear those words of praise, like the woman in Proverbs 31. And instead, what she gets, as we saw last week, are the sword thrusts of verbal attack. Proverbs 26, verse 21. "As charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife." Okay, so a quarrelsome wife can make a marriage so unpleasant that a chateau, a manor house, would not be big enough for her husband to escape in. But a quarrelsome husband can burn that whole house down to the ground. Okay, but if that is the happiness, and it can be great happiness, and that is the hardness of marriage, okay, it's when kids come along that the fun really starts, isn't it? Okay, so second point then, children, discipline or disaster. Home, happy or hell, children, discipline or disaster. Okay, look at Proverbs 10, verse 1. "A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. Okay, so as most of us who are parents know, being a parent can be the greatest of joys, and it can also be the heaviest of heartaches. Okay, but if it is going to be a joy, Proverbs says you're going to have to invest in it. Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Okay, now, like all the Proverbs, that is not a cast iron guarantee, but it is a reliable observation. And the word for train up, interestingly, is the word for dedicating a house or a temple to set it apart for its intended use. What's that for a child? What is that intended use that you are, what is the way that a child should go in that you are training your children up to take? What is the way he should go in? Well, as the rest of Proverbs teaches us, it is the way of wisdom. And that from the earliest moment, we should be focusing our parenting on the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. We should be focusing our parenting on raising kids who love and fear God above all others, and then who live that out in lives of service to others. That's what we should be training our kids to do. But that is not the same as saying that one size of parenting fits all. Because as numerous commentators point out, the proverb says, train a child in the way he should go. So there's an individuality about it. And Sue and I, we were ready to write our book on parenting until daughter number, and I won't tell you which one, until daughter number so-and-so came along, and everything that had worked before proved totally ineffective with her. And we were left thinking, what is happening? What have we brought into the world? Well, sure, Proverbs says, wisdom will tailor how you raise your children according to their individual characters, their personalities, their interests, and their gifts. Now, that is not expressive individualism in the kindergarten, because there is still the way, the singular way that we train our kids to go in. And what I would say to you is just remember, everyone else is falling over themselves to train your children in the way they think they should go. Their friends, their teachers at school, grandparents, advertisers, video game manufacturers and gadget makers. Everyone else has a vision for the kind of person they want your children to become, and they are willing to invest millions in it. So Proverbs says, let it be you who does the training. And as you do, it will require your investment of time and effort. Proverbs 19:18. Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. Which is, there are those days, aren't there, when you feel like strangling your children. Okay, there are days when being a parent feels utterly thankless and hopeless. Okay, Sue and I could tell you the multiple times when we have crashed into bed at the end of the day feeling utterly beaten up, like we are terrible parents, and thinking, what are we supposed to do? And Proverbs says, hey, don't despair. Don't despair. There is hope. And there is hope because there is God. And don't be a passive parent, but don't be an angry parent who just wants to kill your kids. Instead, Proverbs says, discipline them. Discipline them. Set boundaries and enforce boundaries. And Proverbs tells us why we can and should do that with hope. Proverbs 29, verse 15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. And Proverbs 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. Now, just this last week, some friends of one of our daughters, Katie, our youngest daughter, Katie, one of her friends, they've just had their first baby. And this last week, Katie got to go and see the baby and have a cuddle with it. And she sent us a text, and she said she was so tiny and so cute. And I read this text, and I thought, no, Katie, she's a monster. That thing is a monster. She is just waiting to start manipulating her parents. Okay, as G.K. Chesterton wrote, original sin, I think this is amazing, original sin, G.K. Chesterton wrote, is the only doctrine that has been empirically validated by 2,000 years of human history. Because all you have to do is have children of your own to know that every single one of us comes into this world with this inbuilt determination to have this world revolve around us. And we start expressing that determination from the get-go. And Proverbs says, yeah, and discipline, but in the right way at the right time, can help control that selfishness. Okay, but it also tells us what should be motivating our discipline. Proverbs 13:24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Okay, so guys, you do not discipline out of anger. Okay, and you do not discipline so that you can have a quiet life. And you do not discipline so your kids will just leave you alone. And you do not discipline so that your kids grow up to make you look good. Instead, we discipline because we love them. Because we love them. And we know that this way of wisdom and loving and fearing God above anything else is the best way to take. That is the path to happiness and to fulfillment. And a life that is glorifying to God. And we want them to take it. And we love them enough to want that. So, Proverbs says we are going to do it diligently. Okay, which means being consistently consistent. Which means fighting the urge for an easy life and giving in to them. Instead, day in and day out, we train them because we love them. Okay, elephant in the room. Is the rod of discipline physical discipline, or is it more than that? And the answer is yes. Because discipline, okay, however you do it, and I would say we used physical discipline. I think the law here is a bit mixed. Some of your countries that you come from, it is illegal, and you will have to decide in your conscience what you do about that. But however you do it, discipline is not the only weapon in your armory. Proverbs 1, verses 8 to 9. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. Now, our kids are now at the age when they are able and more than willing to tell us all the things that we got wrong in parenting them. Okay, and feel free to ask them. Okay, feel free to ask them, as some of you did last weekend. They will be more than happy to tell you. Okay, just the other week, I asked Katie, our youngest, what we could have done better. And she said, you did not talk enough about your personal relationship with God. Now, we spoke a whole load about God. Okay, we spoke a whole load about theology and about the Bible and about culture and about how you should think and see the world. We spoke much less, and I think that is a valid criticism, we spoke much less about how to cultivate closeness with God. And yet, as you read Proverbs, I think I missed it, okay? It is hard to miss the passion with which these parents encourage their children to pursue God, to love him more than they love anything else. And so Proverbs would say, experience that kind of love of God for yourself and experience what it means to love God like that for yourself, and then instill that same passion in your kids. Okay, but once again, Proverbs is not naive about the hard things of parenting, because you can do everything right and things still go wrong, because ultimately the child has to choose for themselves. Proverbs 13 verse 1. A wise son hears his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. So the fault is not the father's, is it? Yeah, the father's doing the rebuking. He's training both sons, but one is listening and the other isn't. Or Proverbs 10:15, he who gathers in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who brings shame. The implication being, you can have a hard-working family with one son who is pulling his weight and the other one who is pushing up the Zeds in bed. Or Proverbs 29 verse 3, he who loves wisdom makes his father glad, but a companion of prostitutes squanders wealth. Two boys, and one is happily pursuing the path of wisdom, while the other is frittering his life away on short-lived sex. So the person who is growing in wisdom, the parent who is growing in wisdom, understands the incredible power of parenting. But they also understand its limitations. That we get to raise kids who love and serve God and others. But ultimately, they're accountable for themselves, just as we are. Okay, so, as we wrap Proverbs up, okay, last one. How can we become the kind of people who are growing in skill at life, so that if we're married, we're increasingly the kind of person whose husband or whose wife thrives? Or if we are single, how can we be the kind of people who are making wise choices about what to look for in a spouse, or in helping our friends who are married be that kind of spouse? Or if marriage and family are or have been in the past a loveless desert, what can give you the resources to deal with that? And if you're a parent, what can work on your heart so that you want to train your kids in hope and in love and not in anger and frustration? Last point then. Wisdom, a husband, and a son. You're right before Proverbs chapter 31's description of the excellent wife. We get a prayer of a man in despair. Proverbs 30, verses 3 and 4. I have not learned wisdom, nor have I knowledge of the Holy One. Who has ascended to heaven and come down? Who has gathered the wind in his fists? Who has wrapped up the waters in a garment? Who has established all the ends of the earth? What is his name and what is his son's name? Surely you know. And what he's saying is, who could possibly understand God's wisdom? And what chance do I really stand of learning to live life with skill when life is so complex? Okay, but if he is in despair, his questions leave you wondering, don't they? What if wisdom were a person? What if wisdom were a person? What if wisdom, described in Proverbs chapter 8 as that through which God created the universe, the one who gathered the winds in his fists, wrapped up waters in a garment, who established the ends of the earth, that craftsman at God's side, what if wisdom were to become a man and a son? What if you could know his name? What then? Well, the New Testament says you don't have to wonder that any longer. As Paul writes, because of God, you are in Christ Jesus, who became to us wisdom from God. Okay, so wisdom is not some elusive moral quality that you have to spend your life vainly pursuing. Wisdom is a person, and you can know him. And Jesus was and is the ultimate son who always listened to his father's instruction. He is the son who Luke tells us in his gospel increased in wisdom and in stature, in favor with God and man. And the writer to the Hebrews tells us that although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. But what he suffered for our sins and our folly and our lack of wisdom, not his. You see, if a father, as Proverbs tells us, can have two sons, two children, one who pursues wisdom and the other folly, then Jesus is the ultimate righteous son. And we're the opposite. And we deserve the rod of discipline. We deserve the discipline and punishment of our father. But at the cross, it was Jesus who stepped in and took that for us. He's the ultimate son, but he is also the ultimate husband who does not abandon us, but came to us, who always protects and provides for his bride, who loves and cherishes his people so much that he would lay down his life so that we might live. And just like Proverbs 9 describes wisdom inviting us to feast at her table, so Jesus invites us to come and feast at his table, as we're going to do in a moment, on bread and wine, his body and blood, because through the cross he has brought us wayward sons and daughters back into his father's family. And it is there, at the Father's throne, that we can find an oasis of love to bear a desert-like marriage and hope for change. It's there that we can find a love that heals every wound, yet a love that refuses to leave us as we are, but melts our anger and humbles our pride, the stuff that does so much damage to our relationships and our children. And it is there, the Father's throne, that we can begin to learn what true beauty looks like. The beauty of faithfulness and service and self-giving sacrifice. And we will look for and we will praise that kind of beauty in our spouses. And it is as your relationship with Christ deepens that all of these other relationships begin to find their right shape. Proverbs 14:26. In the fear of the Lord, one has strong confidence, and his children will have a refuge. In other words, the very best thing that you can do for your children is to love God more than you love them. You see, if you love your children, or your husband, or your wife more than God, they will become your God. And you'll need them, and you'll demand from them, and you will nag away at them in ways that will break them. And when they fail to perform for you the way you want, you will be broken by them. But when Christ is your greatest delight, you will love them with a love that causes them to thrive. And as they thrive, you will thrive. So, single or married, let us pursue the way of wisdom. Let it shape the way we seek a spouse or treat a spouse. Let us train our kids to do the same, to pursue that way of wisdom, because ultimately that way of wisdom is the Lord Jesus Christ himself. Let's pray.